With its abundant natural beauty, charming towns, and friendly people, South Carolina offers the kind of discoveries that stay with you long after you've left. Like the realization you're good at something you never before tried. Or your first oyster roast, and a taste you didn't expect to love. And other times, it just hits. Like the view on a windswept Appalachian mountaintop. So come find the undiscovered you in South Carolina. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.
There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Well, welcome back to the second hour of Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. We're going to be with our second guest here in a little bit. He is actually en route from the UFO convention that's out, I believe, in San Jose, California right now. He called during the break here to tell us that he's on his way to his room and we'll be able to chat with him. So again, if you have any questions regarding UFOs, USOs, alien abduction, anything like that, and you'd like to be a part of this evening's chat and you're listening, you can certainly tune in and go to our website at darknessradio.com. Click on the listen tab and join in on the live chat. Then you can send us questions right there on the site with the questions for either Tim or I. If you PM them to us, we'll make sure that we get to them. Also, wanted to mention we are going to be doing, it'll be a new show for next weekend. I'm working on a couple of cool guests. I don't want to release that. It will be a new show, but it will be pre-recorded. So I'm going to send out a couple emails this weekend, or this week, I should say, on both MySpace. So if you're a friend on MySpace and you have any questions for the guests that we're bringing, you can pre-request the questions, and we will make sure to add them into the interview. Again, I do have people popping up and asking me questions left and right. Are we going to be going back to Waverly? Yes, we will be working on another event at Waverly Hills Sanitarium. We're going to go back with Jason and Grant from Ghost Hunters, probably Chris Fleming, Patrick Burns again. Had a great time out there. Had some fantastic experiences. Tim, on the we had, again, you know, I mean, fourth floor is known to be active. Fifth mm-hmm. floor is known to be active. Mm-hmm. We had experiences, cool experiences happening on every floor each night. And in the death tunnel, we had people hearing footsteps. Many bat encounters as well. So,
including Batman?
Yes, yeah, so it was a lot of ducking and, bah, what the hell was that? But got a lot of really cool anomalies on video and on tape. Actually, one of the gentlemen showed a photograph. It's really eerie. Hopefully he'll send it out to us. We can put it up. But he's kind of taking a picture from outside a room so you can see the top of a bunch of the adults' heads. Mm-hmm. And then hovering kind of by one of the doorstops, you can actually see a little child's face, I mean, very clearly.
Really?
Yeah, so that was pretty neat to see. Very eerie. Like I said, I heard the footsteps twice in the death tunnel.
Hmm.
And that's off, you know, slightly off grounds from the deal. Although I will say that there are some things that you can debunk kind of easily, and it's important to keep your eye out for these when you go to places. Like, people kept hearing voices
mm-hmm.
in the death tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
You could be pretty far away from the death tunnel and just carrying on a conversation in a normal voice. The way it's set up and the way the little hill is and everything, the voices bank off of it and go down this concrete embankment. It sounds like the people are right at the mouth of the tunnel talking. So, I mean, a lot of EVPs and stuff like that could be tainted from just people out in the, you know, parking lot that were talking. So there is some of that. There are a lot of windows and moonlight that cascades through, so it can cause some, you know, crazy effects and make you think that you're seeing shadow people. But when, you know, you've got Chad Kalick from American Ghost Hunter and Terror Normal standing there with a group of 10 to 12 people, and they're all watching, you know, shadow people dart in and out of doorways and seem to cross hallways, and one came within 10 to 12 feet of them. That's pretty impressive. So this was definitely one of the more active investigations that we've been on with our groups. So we'll be doing another event out there for that. And then Again, the Stanley Hotel is up right now. The Stanley, we still have tickets left for. I think we've got about 20 to 25 tickets left for the Stanley, but the rooms are selling out at the Stanley. The special rates for the 109 and the suites and other things like that are almost completely sold out. So when you do buy, you got to jump on it real quick. Call in on the reservation sheet that you get, the confirmation sheet, and make sure that you book a room at the hotel because it's going to go fast. Otherwise, we will have alternative hotels right in the area within a mile driving distance, so you can still participate in all the ghost hunts, all the lectures. You just won't be able to sleep on site. So I will be making a mention of that as soon as I have verification that they are completely sold out. So again, if you're interested or if you bought tickets and you're waiting to rent your room, don't wait any longer. You're going to want to get on that tomorrow, make sure, because the rooms, I know I spoke to them, I think 2 days ago, they said they were down only 30 rooms left in the entire hotel.
Wow.
They've rented out all of the major suites. I think they're down to like about 25 rooms plus a couple of villas.
Wow.
So they are offering a good deal on some of the villas. So, you know, again, it's a great opportunity. Come on out and have some fun with us at Queen Mary, almost completely sold out as well. We've got great rates at the Queen Mary, only $99 a night to sleep on the Queen Mary and be a part of our event. So keep an eye at darknessevents.com. Sign up quick because tickets are going to sell out. And I don't, you know, we found the last couple times I always offer to help people if they can't go last minute, let us know and we'll have a waiting list. We've had huge waiting lists for the events and nobody's giving up their tickets. So, you know, I can't guarantee if you wait too long that you'll be able to get in on the waiting list because, you know, if Eastern State is any indication, we had 400 people on our waiting list, Tim, for Eastern State Penitentiary. And yes, we are working on another Eastern State Penitentiary event as well. So Tim is giving me the nod from across the board, which means, Dave, it's time to shut up and let's talk to our guest. Am I right? Yes,
you
very
betcha,
good.
Buddy.
Our next guest is William Burns, and he is a New York Times bestselling author, a magazine publisher, a New York literary publishing agent who's written and edited over 25 books and encyclopedias in the fields of human behavior, true crime, current affairs, history, psychology, business, computing, and the paranormal. So this man has definitely got his stuff together. He's got a magazine called UFO Magazine. You've got a link for it right on our website. You can click on it, go check it out. As a publisher of the nationally distributed UFO Magazine and editor of UFO Encyclopedia published by Pocket Books, he's also the co-author. He's been on numerous radio shows, TV shows. As a matter of fact, I watched a special, and that's why I wanted to have him on the show this evening. So let's welcome to the darkness on the edge of town, Mr. Bill Burns. Good evening, sir.
Hi, thank you for having me.
No, I appreciate it. You know, we've heard so many stories in doing the paranormal show that we've been going here for 2 years now. You know, we've talked about UFOs, alien abduction, you know, all of that. The one that we have not really gotten into is the USOs. And I was so intrigued to watch the special that was, I think it was running recently either on the History Channel or
Right, it was the History Channel. There were two. There's USOs, and then there's the Red Alert underwater USOs.
Right, that is the one that I just pounded through about four or five documentaries today on UFOs alone just to watch and, you know, familiarize myself. And I was amazed to see some of the stories, and that's what I wanted to talk with you about as well. First off, it was just 1992, Santa Monica Bay, is that what it was called?
Yes, Santa Monica Bay is the really large bay in Southern California, all the way from Malibu right down to Long Beach.
Now, tell us what happened here. I mean, this is an amazing story, and I've never heard about it until I actually watched the documentary today. And I would have thought this would have been major news that would be talked about as much as the Phoenix Lights, and I've not heard of this story.
Well, in just one, there were many from 1992, but in the one particular one that I remember, there was a multiple sighting of a USO that was actually coming out. Santa Monica Bay, even though it's long, it's shallow, and so I mean shallow by I mean that it's not a bay that goes deep inland. So that means that people can see really all the way around the bay. I mean, you could be on at the edge of Malibu in this place called Point Doom and look directly across the bay all the way down to past Santa Monica to Long Beach. So it really is a great visibility. And in the center, right off the edge of Santa Monica Bay, is the Catalina Island. And so this USO came right out of the water, multiple witness sightings from all over the land. People could see this, and it flew, I mean, dripping water as it went over Catalina Island, and people were just amazed to see this huge, I mean, this is not a small craft. see this huge object, and they've been talking about it for years. And this was eclipsed quite recently by another USO that flew, again, out of Santa Monica Bay and actually was abducting people in this, in San Diego, California, not too far away. Some of the abductees from this underwater UFO had alien implants that were that they discovered during X-rays and operations. And this has been a major incident. It's called the Coronado Incident of underwater UFOs in Santa Monica Bay.
Now, USOs, that's unidentified submersible objects.
Submersible objects, right.
And that is just basically, it's the UFOs. And I mean, the common belief is now that that may be their base of operations. They may not be so far away. They may be right here on our planet, just under our water. Is that right?
That's correct. A USO is a UFO underwater. I mean, just as, you know, I mean, we have subs and planes. They have USOs and UFOs. It's really the same object. And there is a very, very common belief that in some of the deeper waters around the world, certainly not just in California, around the world, as more ancient ruins are discovered of cities that were washed over by oceans, we are seeing underwater UFOs or USOs, underwater submersible objects, in these huge bases under the ocean because they're virtually undetectable.
When we were watching the special, one thing that was so interesting about it is how easy it would be for an amazingly large craft to hide because, as the guy was saying, he had that very powerful flashlight doing the dive there in the bay. His flashlight wouldn't go any more than 3-4 feet in front of him.
That's right.
The silt and everything was there. It could go down a mile in the water and it would be hidden from everybody.
Well, that's absolutely true because especially where, and this was Patrick, where Patrick was diving, was where the Santa Monica Trench begins. So you're in shallow water going out of Redondo Beach Harbor, King Harbor, Redondo Beach Harbor, and then suddenly, I would say a mile and a half, 2 miles out, there's a very sudden drop. And Santa Monica Bay is known for very deep underwater currents. So what happens is that when the sea is choppy, as it was on that day, I can tell you that much, that the current churns up silt and mud from the bottom, and you can't see. So Patrick was right that if he were a UFO, that's where he'd be.
Yeah, that was because that was so amazing to me how easy it would be to do that. Now, the other thing I thought was interesting, they had one of the guys was up in the eagle's nest and could see the round circular motion in the water. Now, was that something that you were able to see as well from ship level?
I could see it from the deck, yes. That was Julius Willis, and he was all the way up. And one of the things we were looking for, which is interesting, is that USOs have such tremendous energy. I mean, you can imagine the energy they have to withstand the kind of pressure at that depth, the water pressure at that depth. So they have tremendous energy because they're generating force fields. It's not that they're made of material that's impregnable, because we know they're not because of Roswell. But they do generate incredible force fields, and it's the force field that allows them to manipulate gravity and anti-gravity and anti-magnetic, and that allows them to punch holes in the water. Well, these incredible energy sources leave traces. One of the things about people don't realize that much about UFOs and USOs is that nothing disappears or appears without a trace.
Right.
And so these USOs, because of the energy required to propel themselves through the water, it's very dense. It isn't like atmosphere. It isn't like space. It's very dense. They generate an incredibly powerful envelope of energy. And that envelope of energy forms an impression in the water that stays in the water. Water, as you know from the motion picture, What the Bleep Do We Know?
Right.
Can be impressed upon by forms of energy, even mental energy. And in this case, the energy stays on the surface of the water, and that's what Kevin saw from up in the crow's nest on top of the boat. And, of course, we saw it from the deck and filmed it from the deck.
They were also mentioning these crop-like circles that appear on water, and that's, again, what you're referring to,
correct? That's what I'm referring to, exactly, that the energy from the craft forms circular designs on the surface of the water, and those circular designs go all the way down to where the craft is eventually going to sit.
How long now have you been interested in UFOs, and was there a specific firing point? We just talked to Stanton Friedman on the air for the first hour, and you know he's never actually seen a UFO himself, but his drive is there because of all of the stuff that's gone on, you know, for hundreds of years now, and reports. It's kept him driven. What is the teetering point that pushed you into really having such a passion for UFOs as well?
Well, a couple of things. When I was 5 years old, I saw one. 5, 6 years old. No, actually older. It was in the 1950s. I was in New York City, and basically I looked out of a window. It was very late at night, and I was playing with my telescope. I shouldn't have been up, but it was a full moon. And and when those telescopes, when they first came out, those reflector telescopes in the 50s, the hobby telescopes, you could really see some of the details on the surface of the moon. And I was just thrilled looking at the moon. I mean, and then one night I was getting up to put the telescope near the window, and out the window, the whole sky was covered in a bright circular light. And it wouldn't go away, and it was just staying there.
Hmm.
And it was... I knew what it was. I mean, I'd seen enough science fiction movies, and it was not a dream, because I remember. And then I remember waiting, and then when I looked up again, it was gone. And it was quite chilling. And that's a childhood experience. And then when in the 1990s, just about maybe 12, 13 years ago, I was hired by a motion picture company in Los Angeles to write a book, to handle the literary rights. Basically, it was kind of the deal that I, the literary agent, I handled the literary rights of one of the people whose life story rights they'd bought, and that was Philip Corso, who was the author with me of The Day After Roswell,
mm-hmm.
about the Army's reverse engineering program for the Roswell craft. And it was really talking to him that led me to when the founder of UFO Magazine said they needed a cash infusion, some investors. I brought the magazine to the Motion Picture Company. By then, Day After Roswell was a New York Times bestseller, so they asked me to stay aboard for a while to help launch the new expanded magazine, and I did. And then when they kind of lost interest, and the magazine was taking away from the movie business, they basically said, look, we'll give you the opportunity to acquire it, and I did. They kept the name, and I took the print and electronic magazine from them.
Very cool. Now, do you feel with all of the stories that go out there and all the calls that you're brought in on and the stories that are shared with you, we seem to be having more and more and more major sightings of UFO activity. You know, especially right now in Mexico, what's going on is crazy. With the amount of things that they're seeing flying around in the skies, what do you think is going on? Why do you feel that there's so much more that's being seen now? I would think now that they know that we have such clear technology to see them and locate them with radar and sonar, why are they making themselves so much more visible?
Well, there are probably two basic reasons for it. Three, considering what their intentions. And I think their intentions are that we are irrelevant.
Okay.
I don't think they're worried about our radar. I don't think they're worried about being seen. I don't think they very much. I think they're going about their business, and they do have business, whatever that business is, and they're going about doing it, and they're not really concerned about who sees what. So I think that's part of it.
Are they in league with our government officials? Do you believe
they are.
Okay.
I mean, that's my belief. I have no specific proof. I mean, I know that we have captured UFOs and downed UFOs, and I know that various aerospace defense contractors have these UFOs that they're working on. So I know there's an active program to reverse engineer the propulsion system so we can figure out how these things work. We still haven't figured out. It's a mystery. But I think that the other answer to the part of your question is that the media is becoming less afraid of reporting UFOs. I think that's a major factor here. It used to be back in the 50s, the only media that would report UFOs would be the tabloids, and they would report UFOs and, you know, UFO aliens meet Marilyn Monroe and things
right.
like that. The alien in the magazines. Now, and especially since the Chicago's O'Hare Airport sighting in November of 2006, media has really jumped on UFOs. Because here's what they found out. That rather than turn readers off, I think if you have a whole UFO newspaper, it's going to turn readers off. But rather than turn readers off, the Chicago Tribune, after reporting, and this was in January 2007, on the Chicago O'Hare Airport sighting and getting into some depth on it, they did a very good job, and they didn't treat it in a derisive way. After that, their website had 1 million hits. It was the largest single interest-grabbing story in the history of the Tribune. And this means this is back from Al Capone days.
Right.
So I have to tell you, newspapers are, they're not not-for-profit, if you know what I mean.
Right,
they're out
exactly.
there to sell papers, right? And the old adage was, if it bleeds, it leads.
Right.
Right? Now it's, if it hovers, we cover.
Well, I know that the news, local news stations, people that I've spoken to have said, anytime they've ever covered a UFO-type story, their ratings are through the roof.
People are learning.
Right.
You're right.
So it's coming out a little bit more often. Now, what do you make of, you know, we'll get more into the USOs as well because I want to talk about some of the rich history. And actually, Tim's signaling me we got to take our break here for the hour. We're going to be back with Bill Burns from UFO Magazine. You're listening to Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. If you have any questions for Mr. Burns, please feel free to PM them to us, or you can email them over to tim@darknessradio.com. We'll be back with more right after this.
Once you have seen Dave and Tim in the light, you'll understand why we must return to the darkness on the edge of town. Stay tuned. There is more to come.
For 58 years, Fate has consistently supplied its loyal readership with a broad array of true reports of the strange and unknown. Fate is a factual magazine containing articles by experts in all walks of life, and by others just like you who have something dynamic, significant, and truthful to say. Keep up with the latest on angels and miracles, psychic phenomena, ghosts, UFOs, archaeological hotspots, alternative science, and much, much more. To receive your free Fate magazine, call now at 1-800-728-2730 or visit our website at www.fatemag.com. That's 1-800-728-2730 or www.fatemag.com. What are you waiting for? Your fate awaits.
Are you tired of reading about what couple in Hollywood is breaking up or divorcing? Have you ever wondered where you can find the news that covers the subjects that you are really interested in? I would like to invite you to visit SupernaturalNews.com. Supernatural News uses the latest internet technology to search for the topics we know you will be interested in reading. News of the latest Bigfoot, UFO, or Loch Ness monster sightings. Read about the latest conspiracy theories and urban legends. Supernatural News, where belief and reality merge.
You hear footsteps and things bumping and banging in the middle of the night. Could it be paranormal activity? Or is it just Dave and Tim raiding your fridge?
Beer.
Strange things happen in the darkness on the edge of town.
Welcome back to the show. You're listening to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. We're here with you live every Sunday night from 10 to midnight Central Time. Along with my co-host and producer, Mr. Tim Dennis, we're here to talk to you, hopefully to educate, enlighten, and entertain. Make sure to join us each week. And if there's any topics that you'd like to hear us talk about, make sure to give us an email at dave@darknessradio.com or at tim@darknessradio.com. We will certainly entertain any idea that deals with the paranormal. Tonight, our guest is Bill Burns, and he is the publisher of UFO Magazine. If you've seen any of the History Channel, Discovery Channel, Learning Channel specials, he always seems to pop up there as one of the resident experts and certainly has his fingers on the pulse of the UFO community. And this evening we're talking to him about USOs, which is underwater submersible objects. We're getting a little off topic here and there, but I want to go back to some of the USO stories, Mr. Burns. And one that's really intriguing to me, you know, we were just talking about is the government in league with the, you know, aliens? And you said you believe that we are working with
them. I believe they are, yes. I believe they are.
Now, they've had an active interest. As you said, they almost say don't care that we know that they're there. They've been tracking our warships, our nuclear plants, things like that. And one that was really fascinating to me was, while watching that special, The was it the SS Franklin D. Roosevelt?
Oh yeah, the USS FDR is probably the most USO'd warship in the. I mean, she's no longer an active aircraft carrier, but from the early 1950s all the way through the NATO Cold War exercises in the North Sea, the FDR has been tracked by UFOs. And the crew, I mean, we have a lot of members of the crew who've come forward to talk about some of these events. I mean, there's a story, for example, one of the early stories of the she actually hit a USO.
Right.
She was it was surfacing. And for some reason, it was an accident. I mean, these things are not infallible. These creatures that fly these things, they're not deities.
Right.
And she actually collided with one and had damage to her bow, and she had to be repaired and dry docked. And then the off Brazil, I think in 1956, there was an exercise, a joint naval exercise with the Brazilian Navy, and a USO came up, and the president of Brazil was on the deck of the Brazilian Navy ship, and he saw the USO hovering over the deck of the FDR. Hmm. And then, of course, again in the North Sea, I want to say maybe 15 years later, I could be off, that the in an exercise in the North Sea with the RAF and NATO fleet, again a USO came up. And this is where the one sailor was describing this on the show, actually tracked the Roosevelt.
Right.
And they had a number of officers on watch confirm they were looking at a USO.
Now, was that the ship that pretty much everybody then was decommissioned off that ship and put on another, you know,
that's
other
right.
ships
they,
and
they
spread
broke
out?
Up that, yeah, they broke up that crew, which is, I mean, it's so sad. You've got the government basically doing really stupid things by diluting its own ability to fight a warship by breaking up the crew and sending it to different places. That's how serious this USO issue is for the government.
Do you feel that with all of the quote-unquote work that the government is doing with aliens, are we giving them permission to abduct? You know, are we working with them? Are we maybe, you know, allowing this to go on?
That's kind of the lore. Okay, that's kind of the lore that from the time of President Eisenhower in 1955, we basically cut a deal with these people or these entities.
Mm-hmm.
And the deal was, don't manifest yourselves in an unbearably public way, like the movie The Day the Earth Stood Still,
right,
when Klaatu lands on the White House lawn. Don't do that. Hang around, fill our skies, we'll deny you exist, take our people, but just, and we won't shoot you down, you don't shoot us down, but just, that's it, don't manifest. And so that's kind of what they've been doing in a very lazy way.
It almost seemed through that special, when they were talking about USOs, that, you know, here we look to the skies, and it may not be that they're coming from other planets, they may just be here all the time. Under our waters, hidden there. Do you believe that? Do you believe that these are creatures that were maybe here before us?
I fully believe that. I believe not only were they here before us, but they probably are us from a distant future, and have been here trying to refine certain bumps, mistakes, disconnects, illogical moments in our timeline. But I think they've always been here. I think they're under the ocean. Yes, I don't think that they're, I mean, if they certainly go out into outer space, but I just think that they have bases here. Yeah.
Now, Nimraku, and I apologize if I'm mispronouncing the name in our chat room, I think we kind of covered this, but just to recover for them, do you believe that UFO activity is on the increase, or is it just being reported more openly now?
I think it is being reported more openly now, not necessarily on the increase. I think it's been pretty steady.
All right. You know, I had a personal experience. Have you had a chance to, you know, in all of your investigating, have you gone out to James Gilliland's ranch out in Washington?
Well, we covered James Gilliland's ranch in a couple of times in UFO magazines, so I'm pretty familiar with it, yes.
Why do you believe that they would just be hanging out over this guy's property so readily?
Well, you know, that brings up the whole issue of, are there certain points, either magnetic points or gravitational points or ley lines on the surface of the Earth that seem to attract flying saucers? In other words, I'll just give you a very kind of banal analogy. They're like seagulls, let's say. I mean, USOs are as bound by the energy requirements to charge their, for want of a better term, motors, engines, that we are.
Mm-hmm.
They're not, again, super. They're not. We will find out when we do find out these are not supernatural.
Okay.
These are perfectly natural. We just don't know the nature of the natural aspects about them yet, right? It's like we didn't discover that gorillas were an animal species until the 1920s.
Right.
Yet people reported gorillas for hundreds of years. We just didn't know what they were. So much of the same thing about flying saucers. And
do you think that could be some of the lore of the lost city of Atlantis? Do you think that it's just it's not lost? It's always been underwater. It's always been inhabited by alien beings. Or perhaps natural inhabitants of our planet. I don't know what the proper term would be on that.
No,
they were here before us.
I believe that there were natural inhabitants of our planet. I believe that Plato's story of Atlantis is true. I believe that the people who looked for Atlantis found it really a couple of years ago, and it was on the NBC special. So I really do believe that. Do I believe that USOs have been here since the beginning of human history? Absolutely, yes, I believe that.
I know that a lot of scientists have brought up the fact that our physiology is made and it's more dense than it should be for this planet. It's a different makeup than animals that are native to this planet, if you will. I don't know if you know what I'm referring to, but it seems like, you know, it would lend itself to believe that maybe, as you mentioned earlier, we are them and they are us. We've just evolved
from
them.
I really do believe that. I think that we are the ETs. I think that there are species of hominids on this planet that developed in various ways. I think that human beings are kind of an offshoot. I think we were reverse engineered into an evolving hominid line, but I do think that we are ultimately them.
Something that I found really interesting, we had an interview with Wayne Herschel from South Africa last year in the first month or two of our show, and one of the things that he was talking to us about is that dolphins, porpoises, are believed to be de-evolved grays. You know, there's proof that dolphins did walk the Earth at one point and that they apparently took to the water to avoid the dinosaurs is what the legend was, but that is why they're so intelligent. That's why they have such the same look as the grays. Have you heard that? Is that something that you subscribe to?
Well, it's something that I'm going to find out more about. The big dolphin UFO conference every year, it's out in Hawaii,
right?
And it's held by a person named Joan Ocean. It's an exciting conference because you actually get to communicate with the dolphins. The dolphins, according to the people who work with them, train them, raise them, learn from them, tell me the dolphins do have the capability of certain kinds of telepathic communication, that they're just a different life form on planet Earth, that indeed they do communicate with the aliens.
Well, it's interesting. It would certainly lend itself, you know, it would make a lot of sense to it being, you know, if aliens were actually the predecessors to human, forms to what we know as currently humans. If they were the, you know, main species and took to the water to avoid the big monsters too, like the dinosaurs, you know, it would make sense that they would be the remnants of it. And then perhaps other species have come here. You know, I mean, where it gets, I think, woogie for so many people that are, you know, that are interested in ufology, but it just gets so crazy is, you know, we hear the theme that there has to be alien work here because look at the pyramids. There's no way that those could be built without some form of higher technology. The hieroglyphs on on the pyramids show bird-like creatures with helmets that almost appear to have microphones coming off
right,
of them.
Right, that's true. That's always bothered me. You're absolutely right. And there's a helicopter on one of the hieroglyphs.
Right, exactly. And they've actually found technology in excavation digs that doesn't belong in that time zone.
They found it at the bottom of the ocean, the incredible astrolabe that they found, the incredible device that essentially was made. It comes from a Roman trading vessel, and it was found in the Mediterranean.
Right.
And here was a device that had 19th century machined gears.
Right.
How did they get there?
Do you think that this has anything to do with time travel itself as well? Or do you think it is just interplanetary? Is it interdimensional? Or is it a mixture of everything?
No, I think it's clearly a mixture. I think the evidence suggests that it's a mixture of everything, that we have overlapping times, that we have anachronistic devices, things that are out of time in the wrong time.
Right.
And I think that science has covered this up. I think that big science, main science, knows the truth. And I think it really is part of the cover-up that's much bigger than just whether there's a UFO or an underwater UFO or USO off Catalina. I think the big issue is that scientists do know that we are descended from them, that we're not, and that they're very, very nervous about the implications of that.
What would be so nerve-wracking about that? I mean, we understand that we've evolved from something. Why fixing the story, or is it because of the religious aspect that God said this is how it happened and that's how we have to believe it?
That's one. But what if there are more than one species, and what if one species is really hostile, and what if we are the result of a Hatfield and McCoy's territory dispute over this planet?
Okay.
And we're the pawns in a much larger game.
Well, it could be said easily, though, that our people, the Earthlings, are a mixed breed of what could be genetic spill-off from many different creatures from many different galaxies. I mean, the looks, the different structures, things that are so radically different between the human species. I mean, even between African Americans and Caucasians, there's huge differences in body structure and buoyancy and things like that. I mean, do you believe that we're nothing more than a petri dish for these aliens to kind of muck with things genetically and put things together the way they want them to be?
I would be more frightened about the fact that the larger reality is that different groups of aliens seeded different species of human, and that are over. Look, I mean, for all the differences in all the races on the planet, the overwhelming similarities are, I mean, you're talking about like 99-1. So, sure, there are different looks, different body shapes, different. But I mean, in reality, human beings are human beings.
Right.
But it's not far-fetched that there were other species of human beings that maybe have long since died off. That Bigfoot or Sasquatch or Yeti was a native species to this planet that would have evolved in some way, yet the presence of an alien culture that stimulated certain kinds of species to evolve into different branches of hominids, that forced the Yeti into kind of a very sad isolation.
We've got proof. I mean, there's inexcusable proof that aliens exist and are messing with our planet and are here, and there's abductions going on. And, you know, I mean, even as a skeptic, the hardcore skeptics out there, you know, or I should say cynics, or cynics, because skeptics are just, you know, you have to prove something to them. The cynics, there's nothing you can say or do that's going to ever change your mind.
Right.
But with the people, you know, all the stuff that we see, all of the proof that we've had, all of the government officials that have come out, you know, Jimmy Carter, Not a lot of people know that, but Jimmy Carter admits to having seen a UFO.
Mm.
And you knew that, right?
I sure did.
Right, and, yeah, so that wasn't, it threw me by Jimmy the Carter, sound, and, I wasn't
and
sure.
Jimmy, right, and Jimmy Carter actually said at a campaign stop,
right,
I will tell the truth about UFOs to the American public. He said it. It was a right. campaign promise. Now, I'm sure it wasn't as high on his list as what to do about the Cold War, but he said it.
Or how to deal with Billy, his brother.
That's right.
That was
which
a lot
even
tougher.
Higher than the Cold War, right.
Maybe he was trying to negotiate a deal where he'd give
fear,
the aliens
exactly.
the brother.
Presidential brothers really are a whole other issue. But the, I mean, look at Bill Clinton's brother. But,
right.
Right? And I actually met him, which is even scarier. But there were three presidents. I mean, let's just say that for argument's sake, UFOs run through at least three presidential administrations.
Right.
Jerry Ford, Jimmy Carter, and Ronald Reagan.
Mm-hmm.
And to some extent, Bill Clinton, but not in major ways. But remember, Jerry Ford in 1966 wrote to, well, remember, I mean, Jerry Ford in 1966 wrote to Chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, Mendel Rivers, to complain that there was no ongoing congressional investigation of UFOs. And in Jerry Ford's home state, Michigan, there were the Hilldale sightings in the 60s.
Right.
Big, big sightings. Walter Cronkite reported on them. They were on TV. Jimmy Carter defeated Jerry Ford and had his own sighting. And what most people don't know is that in 1976, Jimmy Carter asked the then Director of Central Intelligence, right, DCI, to brief him on what the CIA knew about UFOs. And the Director of Central Intelligence said no. He said, Mr. President, you have no need to know. This is curiosity. This is above top secret, above your clearance. That's incredible, above the president's clearance. Who was that DCI? Do we know? Yes, it was George Bush. He briefed Jimmy Carter and said, but if you want to know about UFOs, here is a path through the National Archives of unclassified material that you can follow. And what Carter did when he took office in 1977 was to ask his then domestic policy advisor, Stu Eisenstadt, now one of the trustees of Brandeis University, Stu Eisenstadt, to direct a project on exopolitics with a young lawyer called Alfred Weber, who's now a Canadian citizen, a Canadian subject, and to come up with a protocol, I guess is the best way to say it, right? A protocol, a plan for what we would do to facilitate the contact with an alien civilization. And it was called exopolitics. And it was how to communicate, how to do it, how to bring them into the UN. So for all these things, this was ongoing in 1977. And the Pentagon, the Department of Defense, shut the project down and told Carter no. And, of course, Carter's security advisor was there, Zbigniew Brzezinski, who people think is really in the mix of the people who know about UFOs. And so Carter was shut down. Then Ronald Reagan said to a Wall Street Journal reporter that he chased the UFO across the desert, the Mojave Desert in California, in his gubernatorial plane, then landed and told Nancy about it. Nothing ever happened.
Well, there's a huge rumor that Nixon actually had quite a bit of dealings and had seen the bodies from Roswell.
Nixon, too, is another president with dealings with UFO, and the story about Nixon stems from, this was written, Jackie Gleason wrote this in his autobiography.
Oh, that's right, right.
Jackie Gleason wrote that the evidence is out there.
I mean,
when you realize this turns up, why aren't people screaming? Jackie Gleason wrote in his autobiography that he was bugging Nixon, finally Nixon said, okay, just to shut you up, right? I can't even take a putt without you bellowing in my ear about these lousy UFOs, right? They were golf buddies. He took him to Homestead Air Force Base in Florida and showed him the alien bodies.
Right.
Gleason was so shaken that he never recovered, according to his wife.
Hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, there's been so many presidents that are aware of it, so many upper people. That's why I guess at this point, what does the government have to protect us from to say, I mean, at this point, they could just come right out and say, yeah, we do know there are UFOs. No, we haven't had contact with them. They seem to be observing us. Or do you think that would throw us into a Mars attacks kind of panic, the war of the worlds?
Now, I don't think so, really. What I think is more the case is once you leave a trail out there, look, right now there's a taboo on serious discussions of UFOs. If you start reporting, you know how journalism works, right? You're a radio journalist. You know how journalism works, and you know that to get the stories, you have to have the access, right?
Right.
No access, no stories. Well, it's called access journalism. And to get into the press room of the White House, there's a lot you have to do, but the one thing you never do is talk about UFOs. You just don't do it. I mean, that's your exit out the door. They'll pull your credentials.
Sure.
So the government controls the access to news. If you want the news from the government, then you've got to play by their rules to get it.
And you take the news that they're willing to give you.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
So, I mean, so the answer to your question is that, sure, journalists want to cover it, but they know that unless they consign that news to the nut file,
right,
that president is going to take a very dim view of their correspondent in the White House press room.
Tim, you said you've got a question over there in the chat room?
Yeah, it all kind of ties together with some of the topics we've been talking about, including how UFOs are attracted to what specific areas on the Earth, and then also with the government as well. Jeremy W. in the chat room says, I spent a lot of time in Iraq in the Marines, and I actually remember seeing several lights in the sky that I couldn't explain. I was in intelligence, so I got good working knowledge of all our weapon systems, aircraft, etc. And I know it wasn't any of these. I never heard too much about it, but have there been any reports of increased UFO activity in today's modern war zones, kind of like a repeat of the Foo Fighters during World War II?
Well, the answer is yes, that there is a great deal of activity over the Middle East. Whether they are keeping the playing field level, as you know, at the Malmstrom Air Force Base, all the way back in the, I think it was the 80s, UFOs basically shut down the missile base.
Right.
Shut it down. Couldn't launch a thing. And these were ICBMs. So there are reports of extensive UFO sightings over the Middle East, whether it's because of some anomaly in the Middle East or whether it's because we are so close to pushing a nuclear trigger there. I don't know.
I wonder often when we talk about UFOs and we talk about the things and how they seem to be active at, I mean, let's face it, they're there at historic sites. They follow ships that have, you know, a huge nuclear payload or have a huge place in our history. They follow, you know, there was that famous footage, and I don't know, maybe you know if they've debunked it, but they had famous footage of the UFOs appearing over Vatican City in restricted airspace shortly after the Pope died.
Right.
There's been all this, and you've mentioned that they're us,
we're
them.
They've kind of debunked that. I mean, just to let you know.
Oh, they have. Were, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I wasn't sure, because I know so much of that stuff pops up, and I haven't been able to keep track of what's been debunked.
I mean,
or
there
not.
Was one UFO on the internet. There was a video of it over Haiti, and the thing was that was the same UFO we used as an artistic design for a cover all the way back in 1992. So, I mean, I recognize that.
Okay. Do you think that it's us just coming back to observe history as it occurs?
I think it's more than observe. I mean, I think it's us. I think at least one species is us, and I think it's more than observation. I think we are basically. I think here's a panic, okay? And the panic is once you see if this makes sense to you.
Sure.
Once you discover that time is navigable.
Right.
You get very, very nervous because you realize that if time is navigable, a mistake at an earlier time can wipe you away.
Right.
So what are you going to do? You're going to go back and make sure time stays navigable. even if it means just keeping the road open, right? Making sure that the truck doesn't jackknife on the 405 freeway and traffic gets backed up.
True.
That's what I think is happening.
So you do believe that there is interference in the timeline then as
yes,
well?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
And I think you can. I think we can. I think for people who are sensitive to that, those people can feel it.
You know, we're gonna one more of the government conspiracy questions that Boo Daddy is asking here on our boards, and it, you know, it's kind of an interesting question. He says, "I wonder if we all assume too much about what the government knows. We may be overestimating their actual amount of secrets." You know, that almost lends itself to believe that they wouldn't want to feel left out of the loop for knowing. Do you think that there's maybe a chance they don't know as much as they pretend to not know? I mean, if that makes sense, you know,
well,
where they're giving
I
us disinformation.
Here's what I do know.
Okay.
I know that the CIA has been totally involved in UFOs because the CIA is, they have been filtering information out very selectively since the 1950s.
Mm-hmm.
So on the one hand, they do know a lot. I think that the UFOs are not really as advanced as we think they are. I mean, they actually crashed, so I mean, they can't be that advanced. And I think that the government deliberately doesn't know. I mean, I think it's a willful blindness, and that the government turned, well, this I do know, that the government did turn the spacecraft, the assorted spacecraft, over to private industry, defense contractors, precisely because they didn't want to have to hold on to the secret.
But do you think that maybe they leak information as though they know things that they can come out and deny later, but they actually don't know it, but they want to seem like to, you know, especially during Cold War times, you don't want Russia to feel like they know more than you do.
Oh, no.
So
I mean,
you leak a little bit of information.
Yes,
right.
There was an active, and it wasn't little, there was an active disinformation program run through this DIA, NSA, to convince the Russians that we had more, let's call it UFO knowledge, right? UFO contact than they did. It was an active disinformation program. But some of the material is incredible what we were feeding these guys. Did they believe it? Who knows? But there was a point in the 1970s when the Soviets had the ability to launch satellites immediately to fill gaps in space, and we didn't. And we knew that we were vulnerable to being, to their overpowering us in space. And so I know that we used that disinformation program to try to convince the Soviets, who aren't all that smart either, to try and convince the Soviets that we had some help from the big boys on a distant planet. So don't mess with us, because,
okay,
you know, we got some big friends,
sure,
a lot of juice.
We're bullying people with alien problems.
That's right. It's exactly right. Yeah, right. You know, we leaked an alien story about an interplanetary visitation, and whatever, it worked.
That's crazy. You know, get back to USOs again here real quickly. I want to jump back into this for something because it was an interesting story I heard of. There's a Canadian version of Roswell, correct?
Correct, Shad Harbor.
And now that actually dealt with the USO as well, didn't it? Where,
yes, it did. It
where
did.
A crashed item came down, and then a USO was also seen.
That's right.
And it kind of diverted people over to that as it took off, and then when they came back, the other UFO was gone.
That's true. That's Shag Island, and there's a whole history of Shag Island, and lots of witnesses. And the same thing happened in Australia at a facility there. Same type of scenario. UFO came to divert people, and they were able to rescue the USO.
Now, the one USO that was in the water, I believe, in Canada, it was putting up like this foam, right? And people were able to actually go collect the foam, and they were trying to investigate it, and they were down there swimming around trying to get near it, and they could actually see a craft, but they couldn't get close to it.
That's right. That's this point about the force field,
the
envelope the craft travels in, exactly. And this was seen by swimmers and boaters. They just couldn't get to it. And the Navy wanted to close it off. I mean, the military goes crazy when these things happen because they want to get the civilians out. They'll set off a nuclear weapon just to keep people out.
You know, we've got, Tim, about 3 minutes left on the show. We've got about 3 minutes left, Mr. Burns. Why don't you tell us, first of all, tell people about UFO Magazine. How can they sign up? How can they get involved with it? And, give us a little bit of information how they can get in touch with you if they have questions and stories.
People can visit UFO Magazine on the internet at www.ufomag.com. Go to the internet, see the magazine, download some information about it, subscribe, see the covers. People can also call us at 1-888-UFO-6242, and we're on the phone. We'll talk to you, not 24 hours a day, but most of it. And people can also get UFO Magazine through bookstores, your favorite bookstores. Barnes & Noble and Borders will have it.
Right.
And you can just look for it in the magazine section.
What's coming up in UFO Magazine? Can you give us a
little taste? We have a double-barreled story coming up this issue. One, I think we might have found some hidden photos, archive photos, of a UFO from years and years ago. And I'm going to run those and run the story about it. And we're completing this series we've been doing on Walter Hout and the Russian and the crash in Roswell.
Okay. Let me ask you, when you're coming across hidden photographs, with technology the way it is now, what are your concerns that it's faked evidence now? Because we can do so much with Photoshop.
Oh, I that's a major concern.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's no two ways about it. I mean, the government can slip documents out there, photos, diagrams, all kinds of things. You just slip them out, and then somebody says, hey, look what I found from an anonymous source. And suddenly you're dealing with the anonymous source, and the government's having a field day.
How much of a concern is that for you with your magazine, with new leaked information and photographs?
A lot. We really try and vet this material before it goes in. I'd rather have a hoax from some guy in Burbank,
right,
than I would have an absolutely world-challenging piece of disinformation that people glommed onto.
All right. Well, again, you can look up the information by going to ufomag.com and subscribe there. You can contact him at the website. That's how I found him to bring him on the show, so you can email him there, and he's great about getting back on emails. If you have stories, things that you want to share. Mr. Burns, I want to thank you very much for joining us tonight. I know you were very busy coming off of the UFO expo that you just did out in California.
Right.
And we'd love to have you back on the show here in the future if you have
I would look forward to it. It's a wonderful show.
Great.
And thank you for having me.
Great. Well, thank you. And thank you all for tuning into the show this evening. I'd like to thank our guest, Stanton Friedman. Again, you can check him out at www.stantonfriedman.com. We have a link for it on our website, also for his new book. We also want to thank our guest, Mr. William Burns, who is the publisher of UFO Magazine, and again, you can check that out at ufomag.com. We have a link at our site for UFO Mag. Check it out. Let them know that you heard about it on Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. We thank you all for tuning in this evening. Please be safe. Special shout out to my good buddy, Mr. Timmy D. Happy birthday, Timothy.
Aw, thanks.
Well, we'll be back again with you next week with a brand new show. It will be pre-recorded, so please watch for messages and bulletins on MySpace and on our website. So if you have any questions you'd like to put in for our guest, let us know. And Tim will be here manning the boards for the new show next week as well, so he'll be here to interact with you in the chat room. Look forward to seeing you then. Keep in touch. Remember, dave@darknessradio.com or tim@darknessradio.com with any of your questions or guests. Opinions, anything that you'd like to share with us. Thank you again. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Save big on home updates at Menards. Transform your floors and walls with stylish Mohawk porcelain tile. 12 by 24 inch urban forged tiles combine a bold modern look with the timeless beauty of natural stone for a stunning result. Plus, they feature StepSure, an advanced slip-resistant technology providing safety without compromising style. Save big money on Mohawk porcelain tile. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Be adventurous in the sun. Be protected in the sun. Be confident in the sun. Be fearless in the sun with Blue Lizard Australian Sunscreen. As experts in mineral sunscreens for nearly 30 years, we've earned awards for our high-quality products and the trust of healthcare professionals. Embrace every moment in the sun with your family and Blue Lizard by your side. Be fearless in the sun. Shop Blue Lizard Australian Sunscreen now on Amazon.com.